My name is Eddie Davis, and I have the privilege of hanging out with a lot of volunteers and kids each and every week. And right now, we're in the middle of a series called Recovery Road. And last week, Jonathan started us off by explaining our current condition in our nation. That for many of us, when we feel like our country right now, we feel like that some clouds have kind of settled in over us. And he showed us a picture, and I want you to see it real quick, of how in our country, since at least 9/11, we feel like this is what's going on in our nation. That the stock market has not quite recovered. That the housing market has taken such a dip that people are really struggling to do anything with their homes. That unemployment rates are high and things just aren't looking good. That our nation as a whole has begun to split in half. As you've noticed through the conditions of our recent election, our nation is divided right in two, and things don't look good. They look like this in our nation, where we're looking for some sort of relief. We're looking for some sort of recovery. We want to get out from underneath these dark clouds. And what we want more than anything is for the good times to come back. Jonathan mentioned that we always think about the good times. We think about the sunsets. We think about a picture like this right here where we have a beautiful ocean view where we wish we were right now, am I right? Instead of worrying about thunderstorms and the beautiful Memphis weather that is 38, then 78, then 98, then 28 with wind, snow, storms. You know, we've got all tornadic weather. It's crazy here. But what we want more than anything here in our country, as a country, is beautiful days again. We want things to get back to where they used to be. We want a recovery. And Jonathan did a phenomenal job of explaining to us the way for us to start this recovery process is to not to point fingers, not to start blaming, but to look inside us, to look at our own lives, and to begin to do some self-reflection, some looking in the mirror and figuring out what do I need to do in my life humbly to help the process of getting into recovery as a nation? What can I do individually in my own life to start working on me? To where that I can help other people, to where as a result, our nation can be a nation again that is about humility, that's about putting others first, that's about helping people, not trying to fix people, not dividing, but uniting. And it's in that same vein or in that same path that I want to continue our discussion about recovery and what a road to recovery looks like in our nation. You see, guys, in history, our nation has been one that's been founded upon principles found in this book right here. If you guys aren't familiar, if you're in the back and you can't see me very clearly, this is the Bible. And inside this book, which is basically 66 ancient books collected together, bound together with one theme, and that's basically this, that God made us, God loves us, he has a redemptive plan for mankind because we all in here are knuckleheads, and through Jesus, you can live forever. And it's by that truth and by this word and the God behind this word that our nation was founded. In many nations of the West, when you think about throughout history, France, Great Britain, Spain, they all kind of had this angle about them that they were a nation dependent upon God, that God was going to be their God. And I think what they did, and this is what nations that are smart would do, they would go to the scriptures and they would look for a verse or some sort of principle to rest their foundation upon, their values, their morals. And I think what they did, because this is what I would do if I was in charge of a nation, I would go to a verse that would be beneficial for me, something I could aim for and shoot for. And I think what they did, they looked at Psalm 33:12a, which says that blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And our founding fathers bought into this verse. Our founding fathers thought, yep, that's it. That's the one we want to hang our hat on. That's the one we want to build our economy upon. That's the one we build our military structure upon. That's the one we want to build our economics, our family life, all the things we have in our country. That's the one from other nations that have done that the same. That's why our country for so long, I think, has been in a position of prosperity and peace. Why? Because foundationally, from the very beginning, we were a nation who leaned in on God and depended upon him and the principles found within this book to be what was going to dictate who we were as a culture, as a nation. But guys, as I sit here as a 30-year-old, I can't believe I just said that out loud, a 30-year-old father of two, a husband to a wonderful wife, in my lifetime, I've seen kind of an adjustment in the way our country views God. I see sort of a difference between us as a nation who was founded on principles found in here, founded on principles that are of God, to becoming a nation that's not quite where it once was. Maybe you guys have been around as long as I have, and you understand that God is not quite given the authority and the attention that he used to be given. That prayer, for example, in public settings is not exactly as esteemed as it used to be. That God, allowing him to be in our schools and taking him out of our schools, has created some sort of independence from God in our nation. But the way we look at ourselves from a military standpoint, the way we look at ourselves economically, over the last 30 years or so, we seem to be a nation that is running away from God, not a nation that is running toward God. And in my lifetime, it's been interesting to see what's happened in the marketplace as God has been pushed out, in judicial settings, as God has been pushed out, in other government areas, God has been pushed out. And we are no longer a nation under God, are we? We're no longer a nation that has the national motto, mind you, of "In God we trust." That's our national motto. And to break that down a little simpler for you guys, that just simply means that if we were to get in the room with a bunch of other nations and talk about our mottos, ours would be, "We trust God. We trust God." That's the United States of America's motto, "We trust God." And I'm probably not the only one in this room that doesn't quite think our nation gets that anymore. I just don't think as a nation right now, for some reason, we understand that we are a nation under God. We understand that our foundational fathers, that they built in their nation around this book and the God behind this book. And I think over the last 30 years or so, and I could be wrong, but I think at least in that time frame, the esteem and the attention and the allegiance to God has been waning. It's been slowly dissipating as a country, and it's getting to the point where God is just not around. I mean, look at our current culture. Look at how things are going in our lives. Media is at the tipping point of all things informational. We can kind of just tell, especially those that have a heart for God, that, dude, it's just not like it used to be. Things just aren't like it used to be. And for many of us in the room that follow Jesus or have some sort of relationship with him, we think, man, we got to get back to God. We got to get back to this relationship with God. We've got to start thinking with God in mind more as a nation, or we're never going to get out from the dark clouds. We're never going to recover. The sunny skies will never come back in our nation. It's going to be done for. We are done if we don't get back to our national motto, which is "In God we trust," and to something that was added to our Pledge of Allegiance, which is "One nation under God." But you see, guys, as I look at all the different reasons why our country is currently the way they are, it makes me kind of wonder how we got to this point. We all have theories and ideas about how our nation has kind of tumbled away from God. Some people think it's because we've become too smart. We just got overgrown our need for God. Technology and science has caught up with God, and we just don't need to depend on him. We can depend on our weatherman. We can depend on our business. We can depend on our military. We can depend on those things. And God, just don't need him as much anymore. But guys, I'm telling you, there might be something a little more to it than that. There might be something a little more to the reason why we struggle as a nation to be a nation that is dependent upon God. A nation that seems to have divided itself from who God is. And when I think about what that means, and I think about where we are as a nation, I have to start looking in the mirror. And I have to start thinking about myself. And as Jonathan mentioned last week, if we want recovery to happen in our nation, we want recovery to happen in our homes, we want recovery to happen in any aspect of life, we got to start looking inside. We got to start working on us. It's got to be a me and a we, not a them and a they problem. And as I began to do that over this past week, as I began to think about dependence upon God and how valuable it is for our nation, I began to think about in my own life how independent from God I am. How in times of my life, I have lived as if God doesn't even exist, and I love God. I've been a follower of Jesus since I was 13 years old, yet there are sections of my life where I can think back and look back and be like, wow, God was nowhere near my focus, nowhere near the direction, nowhere near anywhere in my life. Decisions I've made financially, decisions I've made in relationships, all these things do not align with the fact that I claim to be dependent upon God as a follower of his son Jesus. And I'm just wondering if I'm the only person in the room that has struggled with that. Am I the only one in the room that has struggled with trying to carve my own path in life? Am I the only one in the room that has struggled with living a life independent from God, making decisions that bring glory and honor to my name, not his, make my name famous, not his? Am I the only one in the room that has lived life where, with this constant struggle of giving it to God? Even though he's on my list of dependents, he's not my number one list. My self-sufficient life, I think, has put me in a position where I'm not necessarily on the side of the solution here. But guys, what if in this room there are more like me? What if you're struggling with this very thing? What if you're having a tough time understanding that we can't, as followers of Jesus, live independent lives from him and expect anybody in our nation to think that the God that our nation is under is of any value to us anymore? Have you lived your life independent from God? Have we, as a nation that has Christians within it, has the Christians within this nation struggled to give their dependence and allegiance to God in aspects like work, community, relationships with their husbands and their wives? Have we struggled so badly as a nation that our Christians even are getting to the point where they're self-sufficient? So guys, as I look in the mirror, as I try to figure this thing out for myself, I want you guys to think about that as well. Where are you in your dependence upon God? And if we think we're going to have any effect as it relates to recovery in our nation, shouldn't we, the Christians, the ones that feel like God is leading us to lead this charge of recovery, shouldn't we at least think through the fact that maybe, just maybe, we've been living lives independent from God? And guys, it's got to break our hearts. This has to be heartbreaking for us. To think that we would want something so great for our nation, which is allegiance again, which is to be united again, which to have God as their God again, which is to have the values and the moral foundation, which was so thick that other nations used to do research on America. That in the 50s, China was wondering how in the world could the United States be as good and powerful and illustrious as they are when they had three times the people that we do. How could they be the superpower of the world if we have everything else going for us? Well, they looked at our military structure. That wasn't it. They looked at how we did politics with our three-party system, I mean, our three-system deal. That wasn't it. They looked at how we had our economic setup with capitalism. That wasn't it. And they began to look at the values. And they began to look at how Christianity had been such a huge part of the country up to that point, and how the values of the people within the country, how they treated one another, how they loved one another, how they cared about one another, all those things were wrapped up in all the things that were going on in the country, and that's what made our country as amazing as it was. And yet I sit here as a 30-year-old, struggling to find that identity in my own life. As somebody dependent, as somebody pouring in value into other people, as somebody doing what I need to do to be the Christian I was called to be in a nation full of other Christians. Guys, like Jonathan mentioned last week, it starts with us. If we're going to do anything in this country of any value as it relates to recovery, it starts with us. But here's what's so great about God and his word. Here's what's so great about him. That he gives us information that we can go to time and time again in Scripture and figure out ways in which we can apply things to our life and begin to get things back to where they need to be personally so that we can have an effect on our family, our community, and the rest of the country that we live in. And what I want to show you guys today is something that is 3,000 years old. That is a time of history, an event that happened in the nation of Israel 3,000 years ago. And there was a king involved, and there were a bunch of people around him. And what they were doing at the time was dedicating a temple to the God of the universe. And it's in these writings, and it's in these actions that I think if we can glean a little bit from it, begin to continue to self-examine who we are, a recovery in our nation, not only will be possible, it'll be probable. So we're going to be hanging out in 2 Chronicles 6, which is like Old Testament. It's like old. It's after the kings. It's for a bunch of other books. But we're going to be looking at this passage today surrounding this time where things in a nation were going great. You see, in America, when things aren't going great, like right now, it's easy, isn't it, to kind of run to God and be like, hey, I need answers. God, I'm helpless. God, I need you. But this situation happened in a time of prosperity. Things were going great. There wasn't even a cloud in the sky. And yet the actions of this nation and the king of this nation are so profound that if we were to apply it now, watch out. The rest of our nation can just watch out. So guys, we'll be hanging out here for a little bit because what I want to walk through is the scene that Solomon sets for the rest of the people in his country. And in verse 12, it begins like this. Then Solomon stood before the altar of the Lord in the presence of the assembly of Israel, and he spread out his hands. Solomon had made a bronze platform, 5 cubits long. That is about a foot and a half. A cubit is about a foot and a half. 5 of those long, 5 cubits wide, 3 cubits high. And he set it in the court, and then he stood on it. Then he knelt on his knees in the presence of all the assembly of Israel and spread out his hands toward heaven. And he said, O Lord God of Israel, there is no God like you in heaven or on earth, keeping covenant and showing steadfast love to your servants who walk before you with all their heart. Now, to back up a second and kind of give you a little bit more of the context here, Solomon is the king of Israel. His father David was the king of Israel, who began to expand the kingdom and fight people off and really establish their nation as a nation whose God is the Lord. And it was out of David's own mouth that we get Psalm 33:12a, which says, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. It's the one our nation hangs their hat on, or at least we used to. And Solomon gets the kingdom, and Solomon blows the kingdom up even further than his father David did. And this nation is sitting on the top, like the pinnacle of all things in the Mediterranean. Everybody's looking at them. Everybody's gathered around them. They're doing all this incredible stuff. And Solomon builds a platform while they're about to dedicate this temple that he has built for God, this holy place that God's presence is going to come in and be around his people. And he will be their God. And it's going to be phenomenal for the nation. And Solomon builds this platform. He stands up on it in all of his kingly clothing, and instead of drawing attention to himself and saying, look what I've done, look what my hands have made, look at how I've expanded my father's kingdom, who is supposed to be the king of the king of the king of the kings of Israel. This is amazing. Look what I've done. What does he do? He knelt down. He got low. He put himself in a position, if you can imagine with me, all these people around him, he builds this platform up to where they can see him as they're on the ground looking up. And instead of staying up, he gets down. He lowers himself. He humbles himself in front of his people. The king does. You can imagine the awkwardness going on in that room, right? In that court area. They're like, whoa, what's he doing here? Whoa, do I need to bow? Hey, buddy, what do I need to bow? I mean, what do I do here? I got like the robe on. I'm trying to figure this thing out. Do I stand? Do we kneel? What do we do? He's kneeling. The king doesn't kneel. The king just knelt. What's he doing? King doesn't kneel. And Solomon was describing to them, listen, guys, our God is the God that's the only God. Our God is the God of heaven, of heaven and earth. There is no God like our God in heaven or earth who is loving and keeps his commandments. But he doesn't stop there. And quite frankly, we don't have time to read the rest of the prayer. But what we can do is pluck out some things he says within the prayer, because here's what he does. He begins to pull out these if-then phrases. He begins to say, God, if we humble ourselves before you, you will bless us. If we turn our hearts back to you, you will give us relief. But if we are arrogant before you, God, if we live independent lives from you, God, if we make our life about us and not you, God, as your nation, as somebody that cries out to you and says, yep, I need you. I can't live without you. You've rescued me. You've saved me. If we do anything independent of you, God, your presence will be gone from us, God. We won't be able to feel you, God. Our nation will no longer be a blessed nation. He even gets so, you know, grander with it that he begins to talk about how the fact that if a nation whose God is the Lord is such a good thing, is such something that is all on the tip of the tongue of everybody in the nation, where their hearts are all aligned and everything's going in the right direction, then maybe, just maybe, they'll have an effect on other people outside their nation. I mean, think about it, guys. I mean, do we struggle in here? Do we struggle as a nation to really echo the name of God, to really lift up Jesus to those around us that might not know him? Do people really see Jesus reflecting in your life? Are we shining light in dark places? Solomon's like, hey, listen, God, please, please make us be a people for those that don't know you, to where they might know you. Well, I'm not going to talk about it. Let me read it real quick. 632 and 33 says this. It says, likewise, when a foreigner, when somebody outside of the nation of Israel comes from a far country, for the sake of your great name and your mighty hand and your outstretched arm, when he comes and prays towards this house. Now, why would he do that? He's doing that because of the activity going on within the people of God, because of their dependence upon their God. That's why they're doing that. People are hearing news. Man, something's going on in Israel. Something's going on with those people of God again. Oh, I got to figure out about this God. Their God seems to be answering prayers. Their God seems to be doing something with them. Their God seems to be mighty and actually real. Their God's not made out of gold. Their God's not made out of wood. Their God's not made out of anything. He is this invisible God who is alive and well. Wow. I got to go pray to that God. And Solomon's like, listen, God, when they pray toward your house, that is the temple that he just built, hear from heaven from your dwelling place and do according to all for which the foreigner calls to you. Answer their prayers, God, in order that all the peoples of the earth may know your name and fear you, as do your people Israel, and that they may know that this house that I have built is called by your name. God, what Solomon was trying to express in his prayer in the midst of the assembly is that, listen, the hearts of those who know God should be so in tune with God that they're living lives so dependent upon God that everybody around them has no problem with them. If they have a problem with anything, it's at least with the God behind these people. That they give them no excuse as to who their God is, because they can't quit talking about it. They can't quit living like it. They are so dependent upon him that they don't live their lives independent from him in such a way that people just say, all right, something supernatural is going on over there with those folks. Now, is that true in your own life? Can you honestly sit there where you're sitting? Can I honestly sit here where I'm sitting and think, yep, I'm a lot like them? No, I struggle with this, guys. I struggle in my conversations with people. I struggle within my attitude. I think a lot of times that my life is all about me. And Solomon was saying, God, please don't let us get to that point in our nation. Please don't let it get to the point where we're all about us, where we feel like that we were created to serve our purposes and our needs. God, please let us remember that you're God and we're not, that you're sovereign and we're not, that you have done all this in the nation, that I'm a king over all these people, God, but you are in authority over me. That I'm in charge of everything around that I see, God, but you're in charge of everything that can be seen, God. That though I might be in charge, God, you're in charge of everything. And guys, that was the king. You imagine a leader like that in our country today? It'd be mind-boggling. It'd be unbelievable. Don't we pray for a leader such as that? That has such a humility. Wouldn't it be incredible if we had a leader such as that? That would rise up with a humble heart and saying, God, I can't lead a nation unless you lead the nation. God, none of my policies will make any sense whatsoever unless you're behind every single one of them. God, I don't want anything to do with leadership unless I'm following the ultimate leader. See, guys, that was the heartbeat of the nation of Israel some 3,000 years ago. And guys, here's what happens at the end of the prayer. This is where it just gets kind of creepy. When Solomon gets done praying, a fire from heaven falls down and consumes the altar that he had set up as sacrifices for God. A fire from heaven, let me repeat that again for the third time. A fire from heaven falls down on this altar and consumes everything within it. And at that moment, anybody that had any doubts whatsoever, if God was real, if God existed, if they were dependent upon him, all those doubts were evaporated immediately. Why? Because they then could see God's presence. It says the glory of God and the presence of God filled the temple area where everybody didn't stay up and was like this right here. They got low. They got down on their knees. They put their faces to the ground. Why? Because God is such a magnificent, huge God who created everything by his own mouth that all we have to do is believe and trust that he is him, he is who he is, that we will be taken care of. That nothing they have done in their entire lives compared to that moment, that nothing they ever made for themselves, the arrogance, the pride they've ever stirred up in their lives was all evaporated like that. Why? Because God is not like us, and there is nothing like him. And in that moment, they believed that. Their hearts were aligned with God. Individually, they were aligned with God. And as a nation, they were aligned with God. Their dependence was on God. And guys, at the end of the prayer, this is what's so just amazing in this setting, in this story, in this historical document, this record here. That when Solomon got done praying, when Solomon wrapped up his prayer, when Solomon got done with this day of dedication, when God showed up and totally blew the minds of everybody there, because you can imagine the conversation the next day, right? Two guys standing next to each other, fire from heaven comes down, consumes the altar. The guy standing next to the guy's like, hey man, you remember what happened yesterday? Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, God's real. Oh yeah, God's real. Then the next day they get together. Hey, man, you remember what happened a couple days ago? That whole fire from heaven thing? Face down to the ground thing? Yeah, God's real. You think those people ever forgot what happened that day? Do you guys think that those people ever forgot who God was in their life from that day forward? Maybe. But man, it had to have been hard. It had to have been difficult for them to whiff on God in their life again. Why? Because God showed up. Why? Because their hearts were aligned with his. And a nation whose God is the Lord will be blessed. And that's exactly where Solomon had his nation. The leader had his nation under the authority of God. Well, Solomon finishes his day, and you can imagine how tired he is from this prayer and just spending a day doing this thing and being in the presence of all these people and dedicating the temple. And he's laying in bed. And in chapter 7, verse 12, it picks up. And the Lord actually appears to Solomon. And this is what he says. He says, I've heard your prayer and I've chosen this place for myself as a house of sacrifice. Well, that's good. When I shut up the heavens so that there is no rain, or command the locusts to devour the land, or send pestilence among my people, if my people who are called by my name, check this out, verse 14, huge. Go ahead and just absorb this in personally. If my people who are called by my name humble themselves, pray and seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, I will forgive their sin, and I will heal their land. Wow. Really? Like, as a nation, if we were to do that, do you think God would do that? If we were to humble ourselves, if we were to pray and seek God's face, if we were to turn from our wicked ways, do you think God would hear us, forgive us, and heal our land as a nation? You guys understand this was written specifically for the people of Israel. This wasn't written to us as the United States of America. But I have to think that this principle of confession and humble hearts and turning things back over to God and making it about Him, not us, getting our lives back in order where He is number one priority on our list. We're dependent upon Him and nobody else. I think if that's the case, if that's where we are right now, that God will show up in our country. And here's how I know why it's true. Here's how I know it's true. In my life, I've struggled with things financially, especially when I was in college. I made some decisions and I got into some debt. And it was student debt, which I've heard is good debt. But what it allowed me to do, it gave me the freedom to spend money like I had money to spend, to live way outside my means, to do anything I wanted to do, really. Why? Because I had a bank account now with a student loan in it that seemed to never end until the day it did. And in that moment, I had to humble myself. I had to recognize the error of my ways. I had to turn my heart back to God. Me and my wife, because at the point we were just in the midst of getting married, we had to figure this thing out together. That, man, I've done a phenomenal job of messing my own life up, living independent from Him as I handle my finances. So we went before God, we bowed our knee, we became dependent upon Him. I began to spend less than I made. I began to save a little money, and I got out of debt. Now, was that a miracle? Maybe, but I don't think so. I think it's me just living this principle out, that God shows up and blesses those whose God is the Lord, who humbles their hearts before Him and says, yep, God, you're God. I'm not. I've gotten myself into this mess. I need to throw my hands up and say, I can't get myself out of this mess. I mean, think about it relationally, husbands and wives. Has there ever been a case where you've had an issue? You can't seem to get it right? And you've worked and you've worked and you've worked with your own mind and with your own strength, within your own power to get all this stuff together. But because you are you and you are fallible and you just can't get it together, you together come together and say, we can't do this anymore. We've got to go before God. We've got to break our hearts down. We've got to humble ourselves. We've got to say, God, you've got to be God in here. You've got to fix our relationship. And we dive back into the scriptures and we read in Ephesians 5 where it says that husbands, love your wives as Christ loves the church. Be willing to sacrifice yourself for her. Ooh. Wives, honor your husbands. Support your husbands. Love your husbands. Respect your husbands. And in that time, and in that moment, all of a sudden, whoops, the relationship gets back together. Why? Because they're putting it back on God. They're dependent upon God. And God blesses that relationship. Guys, it happens in our job settings. It happens in our other relationships. This principle is just true. That blessed is a nation whose God is the Lord. And I'm telling you right now, as believers within this nation, if we understand that when we turn our hearts back to God, when we give it back to God, things can get better. And guys, if we get this, our lives and the lives of those around us individually will be better. And you see, our founding fathers got this. And in a time where it was just so paramount that our nation was divided, in the middle of the Civil War, the president of our country, Abraham Lincoln, was presented a resolution declaring this very thing. And I want to read an excerpt from this today, because it speaks so well into where we are as a nation, so well as to where we are, maybe even our own families, that if we get this recovery within our nation, It's not only possible, guys, it's probable. So, guys, let me read this to you and understand the context. This is middle of the Civil War. The North is doing whatever it can to keep this country united. The North seems to be wanting to preserve the rights of other human beings. And it's the North that prays this, that sends out this proclamation, which quite honestly could have been a prayer from our president. It says this. It says, "We've been the recipients of the choicest bounties of heaven. We've been preserved these many years in peace and prosperity. We've grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no other nation has ever grown." That sounds familiar, doesn't it? "But we've forgotten God. We've forgotten the gracious hand which preserved us in peace and multiplied and enriched and strengthened us. And we vainly imagined in the deceitfulness of our hearts that all these things were produced by some superior wisdom and virtue of our own." Is he speaking to us right now, today in this room right now? Is he talking to us right now? "Intoxicated with unbroken success, we become too self-sufficient to feel the necessity of redeeming and preserving grace. Too proud to pray to the God that made us." Is that us in this room? Is it me on this stage? Yeah. "It behooves us then," and this is the challenge, "to humble ourselves before the offended power, to confess our national sins, and to pray for clemency or a pardon and forgiveness." Guys, that was 1863. That was brought to President Lincoln by the Senate, requested as a resolution by Senator James Harlan for a national day of prayer, where our nation would get low, where our nation would say, "We are under God. I'm sorry we forgot where we came from. I'm sorry we forgot what this country was built upon. God, I'm sorry I confess that as a nation." But guys, remember that if any recovery in our nation is going to start at all as it relates to God, as it relates to real, true recovery, it starts with the Christians, the God-fearers, the ones that understand that, hey, God is God and we are not. God gave us a relationship with him through his son Jesus, and that out of that love for us, we should then love other people. We should then become dependent upon him in every circumstance, in our jobs, in our marriages, in our relationships with those in our neighborhood. We should handle our finances in such a way. We should just be humble, loving, caring, Jesus-reflecting people. If we all understand that in these seats in this room, it begins to permeate through the culture. Imagine if 186 million Christians whom live and say that Jesus is their Lord, imagine if they were to rise up with humble hearts. Imagine the impact it would have in our country. Imagine the impact it would have in our world, where we would finally, once again, be looked upon as a nation that is a blessing for other people. That we're not just a nation that's consuming like other people. That is all about themselves. That is self-sufficient. That is godless. Guys, it starts right here in this room. It starts right here in our own hearts. We've got to examine where we are. We've got to figure out, is it me? Am I the one? Am I a part of the problem? Or am I a part of the solution? Am I helping in this recovery? Or am I keeping us distanced from recovery? And guys, if Jesus has any value in your life, please put him back to that seat of authority. Please put him back in that position of excellence. And allow him to be your God. And we can then be his people. And with humble hearts, we can change the world we live in and the world we find ourselves in. So God, that's the challenge. Guys, that's the challenge today. That's where we find ourselves today. If we want to be a nation that is recovered, we want to stay on this path of recovery, this recovery road, we've got to humble our hearts. We've got to become dependent upon God. We've got to let that be a reflection of our life. I want to do it. And I know you guys want to as well. So let's do it.